In seven, a little bit past seven, but we're here and we're happy to be here tonight. And looks like we're going to be having, well, not maybe next week, the 18th, the Wednesday the 18th and Sunday the 21st. That's when the gospel meeting is going to be, if I'm not mistaken. And we will take those days off and we will enjoy the gospel meeting that week. Okay, so we're on the life of Christ, or Jesus the Christ, as the topic is of our series of lessons. And I can't believe this is the 10th class. I thought it's just unbelievable how time just flies and how many lessons we've been going through. And I feel like we haven't really got really deep as we could have. But I'm just joyful for being able to teach and study together these great lessons. So today we're not gonna focus on a specific text. We're gonna focus on a topic rather. And the topic what we're gonna focus this afternoon is on Jesus' preaching. We're gonna just briefly do an overview of his preaching. And the Bible, the New Testament especially, tells us a lot about his preaching. And do you notice, we know that if we think about Jesus' mission on earth, we quickly will think that he came to do what as his mission? What will we say? He came to do what? Okay, correct. To seek and save the lost, Luke 19:10. And then, so he came to die on the cross for those whom he was seeking, for all those lost, for all of us. That's one of his purpose. But I want you to point out, if you have your Bible, you want to look at Mark 1:38. And I like this verse a lot because it explicitly gives us one of Jesus' purpose, on earth, one side of his different purposes for coming to earth. Notice Mark 1 and verse 38, and the context is he went out to pray, and Peter was looking for him. Everybody was looking for him, but Simon Peter found him. And notice verse 38. Mark 1. I'm sorry if I say Luke. Mark 1:38, and he said unto them, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also. For therefore came I forth. He came for the purpose also to preach, to seek and save the lost. He needed to go ahead and preach. That's one of his purposes in coming to earth as well, or one of his purposes on beginning his ministry. Luke 4:43 gives us exactly the same account, and also tells us that he came to preach. So that's why we read in Matthew 4:17 that from that time, after his baptism, after his temptation, from that time Jesus began to preach and to say what? Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. From that point on, he began to preach. And there's different accounts that we can read in the Gospels, where specifically he's mentioned that he's his preaching. Now, for example, Mark 1:14. Now, after that John was put in prison, Jesus came into Galilee preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. We're going to see on Sunday that this verse, when Jesus was preaching in Judea, he was baptized in Judea by John, and then he began to preach in Judea for about a year or so, maybe a year and a half. And when John was put in prison, Jesus immediately went back to Galilee, because probably he was afraid he was going to be put into prison like John was, and that was going to hinder his purpose in coming. So he went back to Galilee, and he was doing what? He was preaching. So all through his ministry, Jesus is preaching. And I don't know if you wonder, sometimes I wonder, what was his voice like? The gospel accounts tells us that he was preaching from a boat on the ocean to the multitude. I don't know, he probably had a really strong voice, or maybe the wind helped him out or something, but multitudes were listening to his preaching. I don't know the way he conducted himself, the way he acted. I don't know how he do it. We know a lot of preachers nowadays, and there's different styles, different personalities, but I wonder, what was Jesus' personality? How did he preach? Although the Bible doesn't focus on that, the Bible does focus on something else. And I wanna just bring it up as we draw this lesson. So how was the preaching of Jesus? How was it? What content did he have? Notice in the first place, and as we move on, and of course you're always welcome to make any comments, but this is a class fashion. But do you remember in Matthew 23, when he's rebuking all these Pharisees, he's rebuking all these doctors of the law, and in that chapter, Matthew 23, there's a phrase where he says, in verse 3, "All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, or whatever they tell you to do, do." But what's the problem? Whatever they tell you to do, observe. Okay? Because, let me read it again, because I lost the track, my track here. "All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that," okay, I'm reading it wrong, I'm sorry. "All therefore, whatsoever they bid you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do after their works, for they say," and what? "And do not." They say and do not. Do what they say, don't follow their example, because they say and do not. So Jesus is preaching contrary to these people, and contrary to many throughout the ages who say and do not. Jesus is preaching, "Our Lord always did what was right. Always did what was correct." Contrary to many, starting from his time, did what they preach, but did not do what they preach. And I think we're not done with that even these days. So he never sinned. He never did anything wrong. He was a perfect preacher. Imagine that power, something perfect, who had done it, who had lived it all his life and never made a mistake, is preaching. And that caught the attention of all the people in their time. So when Jesus came in his ministry, he came to do the will of the Father. And my question is, did he fulfill the will of the Father? He fulfilled it perfectly. He did the will of the Father. Notice, for instance, John, if you are there, if you want to, I'm going to read three verses in the book of John. If you have John with you, if you want to follow along. Notice first, John 4:43. I'm sorry, John 4:34. I read it backwards. Jesus said to them, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." Remember when he was in Samaria, as we are reading this verse, and they came and asked him to eat, and he said, "No, I have another food to eat." And they were wondering, well, maybe somebody already fed them or invited him to eat. But he said, "No, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." So he came seeking to do the will of the Father, and he fulfilled it. Now notice, turn your pages or right across where you are in chapter 5, verse 30. And it reads, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of he who sent me." So we're just pointing out Jesus doing the will of the Father throughout his life, early life here on earth. So that was a different kind of a preacher. Now notice 17:4. Now we turn to two chapters over, a few pages. John chapter 17. Now notice verse 4. I have glorified you on the earth. I have finished the work which you have sent me to do. I have finished the work. I have done everything that you had sent me to do. So Jesus' life was fulfilling and obeying the will of God. So not only that, but where did Jesus' teaching come from? Let's answer that question. Notice, for example, right there in John 17, for instance, verse 8. For I have given to them the words which you have given me, and they have received them, and have known surely that I come from you, and they have believed that you sent me. Okay, I have given the words which you gave me. So notice this preaching. He's preaching the words of the Father. Do we have any preaching nowadays that does not contain the words of the Father? Back in Mexico, and I have some stories back in Palenque, all the way south Mexico. Palenque is a city, very religious city, and it's full of different churches with different names. So I started doing, but I didn't continue because I just didn't find, but I started visiting some of those places, and I went to one of those and just to try to document and see what else we had around and help the brethren. But this person, he spoke for 2 hours. I was ready to go, but I didn't want to be rude, and I was there, and I was sitting there for 2 hours. You won't believe it, but 2 Bible verses he used. 2 hours. You think the Father is speaking there? Unlikely. He is the one speaking there. And the 2 verses he used them as a trampoline to take a word from there and just keep on speaking on whatever he was talking about. And I wrote notes and everything, took pictures and everything. But I say, if all these places take 2 hours, I think I'm not going to go anymore. It's a lot of time. And then he began doing his invitation, and that took another hour or so. And it's just an example. And I'm not telling you who they are or anything, because we're just using a general example of people can speak without letting God speak. And that's just the point, nothing else. So Jesus spoke the words of the Father. His teaching was the teaching of the Father. Notice again in John 17:14, I have given them your word, and the world. Let's just stop there. I have given them your word. So here's Jesus again saying, what I'm giving them is your word. The word, the will of the Father, your will. So this is Jesus' teaching the word of the Father. How humble that he calls it the word of the Father, being himself deity. He is under subjection of the Father on the fleshly body, and he's doing the will of the Father, relating to all of us, because we are to do the will of the Father as well. And that's what we are to teach, or to teach the will of the Father as well. So he's relating in a human way to us, in this subjection which he's going through. Okay? So we read in Peter that never was deceit found in his mouth. So he not only was sinless, a perfect, and he was also preaching the will of the Father. And Peter, 1 Peter 2:22, there was no guile nor deceit found in his mouth. What a great character of this preacher. No wonder in the book of Acts, Acts 1:1, Luke right away tells us that he's investigating and doing a research of the things which Jesus began both to what? To do and to teach. So this was a preacher who did what he preached. I'm not saying that we preachers don't do what we preach, but I'm saying he's the only one that perfectly did everything he spoke. He's the one, this kind of preacher. Okay? So, contrary to those of his time and around the time he did what he preached. So that's one characteristic we learn from Jesus' preaching. Any comments so far? Thank you. Thank you for pointing it out. We will mention it briefly as we go on, but it's a different teaching. He knows what he's saying. He's not doubting. He's not. Sometimes some preachers or maybe some teachers or anybody in the religious world could just ask a question and just leave you with the question and just leave you in the air, nothing specific, nothing concrete, no answer, no question, completely answer. But Jesus answered right away questions that were asked to him, direct to the point, give him an answer. He was not hesitating, he was not doubting, or say maybe this. He knew the answer and he'll give the answer. And this speaks of his authority. He knew what he was teaching and he had authority to teach it. And remember in Matthew 19, when he makes a reference of the book of Genesis concerning a question on marriage, he makes a reference to Genesis, but then he adds to it from his own authority. So that speaks of no rabbi or anybody else will dare to do what he did. Add to that, or explain it, or broaden it more. I don't know the word, but he spoke with authority, and we're going to mention that. And I wanted to, if you want to go with me to John 7, before we move on, and I meant to start with this passage too, but I skipped it. And it happens a lot when one's teaching or preaching and he's nervous or something. It happens a lot, so no problem. We can go back and notice. Reminds me of a student at the school of preaching. He was preaching his last sermon, and his last chapel speech. We don't get criticized. We don't get any corrections. You preach what you want, and that's it. And usually we preach farewells and things like that and give thanks to the instructor. So he preached his first point really boldly, but then he preached his second point, and so, and when he finished his second point, he said, wait a minute, this wasn't my second point, this was my third point. I went ahead of myself. So since I'm not being criticized or anything, I can go ahead and do my second point as if it was the last point. So, and everybody was just having a good time when he was saying that. But, okay. John 7. Notice, in this chapter, he's, in Galilee, but then he goes to Judea for the Feast of the Tabernacles. And he goes into the temple and begins to teach. And it seems like the Pharisees and those people send some officers to go and get him. And he was teaching among the multitudes, and multitudes were hearing him at the temple, and they were afraid to get him because they didn't want to upset those who were listening to him. So what did the officer do? Since they couldn't get a hold of him because the multitudes were there and he was teaching, they stood up there to listen to his teaching. That's the only option they had. So they were there listening to this preacher preach, and notice what happened. Since they couldn't get him, notice John 7, verse 45. Then the officers came to the chief priests and Pharisees. These are the ones who sent them to go get him, who said to them, why have you not brought him? Weren't you supposed to go get him? Where is he? You're supposed to bring him back. And then the officers were honest. They just told the truth and they said, no man ever spoke like this. I imagine them going, seeing him there teaching, everybody listening to him, and they say, well, we cannot get him, just stand here. And probably just, when you listen to somebody and really impressed, probably just looking straight at him or mouth open or anything, or just listen to him preach. Because no man ever spoke like this man. That's what they say. And this is Jesus' preaching. No one ever spoke like he did. And I cannot understand the prophets of the old wanting to see the days of Jesus, and they didn't get to. But John the Baptist did, and the apostles did. And then some of us would like to go back and be able to see the ministry of Jesus, see him act, see him preach, see him teach. And it might not be the way we're used to in the world in general, to hearing somebody teach the Bible. It might be different altogether. We don't know, but I often wonder how he was, and I wish I could be there to listen to him. Sometimes I wonder when we're in heaven, we will be able to ask those kinds of things from God, letting us just see pictures of the past, and I would love that. If he tells Raphael, what would you like to see? And I said, I would like to see all 3 years of Jesus' ministry. I would like to see the Red Sea being open. I would like to see all of those things, as many as I can see them. That would be nice. But that's something just I think sometimes. But okay, going back to our subject. So in the second place, Jesus, as a minister, as a preacher, he loved his Father, and he also loved the truth that was given by his Father. Notice, for example, Revelation 1:1, just beginning right there. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him. God gave this revelation to him to show to his servant things which must surely come to pass, and he sent him, signified by his angel, unto his servant John. This revelation God gave to him, and he gave to his servant. And Jesus faithfully revealed it to his servants, because he loved the truth. He loved to tell what God told him to tell. And this is how the book of Revelation begins. So Jesus always spoke the truth. I remember one of my instructors back at Memphis, and he said, I'm old and I've been preaching for many years. I'm not worried about being nervous out there. I'm not worried about standing in front of the people. He said, what I'm worried about is sometimes making a mistake and saying something that is not biblically true. That's what he said. And that's true. Because we're human. And I've made mistakes, and sometimes brethren are really nice to correct you when you make mistakes. Sometimes some brethren are not as nice to correct you when you make mistakes. And growing up as a little, I usually say growing up as a boy when I was 15, and Nancy really laughs at that, because he said, you consider yourself a boy when you were 15? You're old already. But oh well, when I was growing up, just having some experiences, making mistakes at the pulpit, and just some old sisters or just getting onto you and getting you told, and I don't know how I made it through, but here I am again, exposing myself. But Jesus did not make these mistakes. Do you remember John 8:45, what it reads there? And because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. Jesus always spoke the truth. He didn't make a mistake when he was speaking. He spoke plainly and correctly the will of the Father. Notice, remember John 14:6? I am the way. What else? The truth and the lie. I am the truth. When I speak the truth. And reminds me of the devil. When he spoke what? He always spoke lies. The devil is it's a liar. Okay? We still have good time. Let me move along more quickly. Okay, so, John 8:32, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus was speaking and teaching the truth. So he never left the apostles or his disciples or anybody under a false understanding. He never confused them. He never led them to something that was not true. He always gave them confidence of what he was saying was correct. Remember when he promised them a home in heaven? What did he tell them? If it were not so, what? I would have told you, because I'll tell you the truth all the time. If it wasn't the case that there's a home in heaven, I would already have told you. But I'm telling you, you're going to come home with me. It's always speaking the truth. What a wonderful, marvelous preacher we have here in Jesus Christ. So, and he spoke, "Verily, verily, I say to you, truly, truly, I say to you, what are you about to hear? It's nothing but the truth." Like they say here in English, you can take it to the bank. If I say that in Spanish, they will say, "What are you talking about?" We don't use that expression. That's English. So you can take it to the bank. Okay, so this is Jesus speaking the truth. Any comments so far right here? Okay. So not only did he did what he preached, not only did he love his Father and love the truth with what's given to him, he also loved the souls of man. And I'm going to be honest with you, if in my prayers, something that I constantly ask about is that God will give me an honest desire for the benefit of the souls of man. That's my prayer. I want to have a genuine interest in people. And that's what it's all about. You cannot be a preacher or a teacher without the people. And you cannot want to be a preacher or a minister or anything related to it if you don't have a genuine love for the souls. That's what it's all about. And growing up, I thought that preaching was just standing up and just giving a lesson and go home and forget about it and never speak to anybody else. But you can hardly preach if you don't have a genuine love, interest for people. So Jesus, this is his preaching. John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he did what? He gave his only begotten Son, and has interest in the souls of man. When we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Romans 5:8. I'm just reading these verses as quickly as I can. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that by the grace of God should taste death for every man. That speaks of it as Hebrews 2:9. That speaks of a genuine interest for souls. And it was the same case during his ministry. Remember his parents? He was interested in the welfare of his parents. He was subject unto his parents. Like we read in the account of Luke, in Luke 2:15. And he loved his mother, and also remember when he was at the cross, he told John, "He's your mother, John, he's your son." And some believe that's a general statement for everybody to say, "Well, Mary's my mother, so therefore we are to give worship to Mary." He's speaking to John, he's speaking to Mary, he's speaking to them, and he's giving. He's saying, "I'm going to be gone. John, please take care of her. So I'm interested in her. She's my mom. Anyway, she's the one that gave me this early body I have." Yes, Brother Larry. Okay, good comment. Good point. Yes, and there's different ways we can prove that too. And but the Bible is just clear on who are we to worship. Only God would worship, like we read on the temptation last week. Okay, and Jesus in his preaching said, "For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" He's putting emphasis on people's souls. Soul is worth what I'm doing here. Souls are worth my preaching. Souls are worth these 3.5 or so years of my ministry and going to the cross, because I'm interested in the souls of this man. And Jesus also in his preaching, he said that we should not be afraid of those who kill the body. He said, because the soul is eternal, goes ahead and keeps on existing. And this is why I'm interested in you. A genuine care for people. And this make him a great preacher. This is who wouldn't want a preacher who cares for souls? all congregations love those preachers, elders, and any type of leader that cares for the souls. Congregation, we love them because we like to be called by our name. We like to be visited and so on. We like some attention. All of us like, and when preacher gives attention, oh, we like that. And Jesus was a man who gave attention to people. He did, to the point of being busy in his ministry and letting the little children come to him, and he would touch them, bless them, pray over them. Just some children, random children that came. So this is Jesus preaching. He was interesting in the men. And no matter how humble people were, they were able to understand him. In fact, the more honest and more humble people were, the easier it was for them to understand his parables and his teaching. So he made the teaching to adapt to those who were genuinely seeking to listen to him. He said, you really want to understand and obey what I'm saying? Okay, these parables, these teachings are focused on you. So you are going to understand them. And those who have a hard heart, and they just are here just to see what can they get from me, or just to trap me, guess what? They're not going to understand a word of what I'm saying. Even the apostles didn't understand some of the parables themselves. And they asked him. They got the benefit of being with him and asked, what does this parable mean? Explain to us the parable of the tares. What about the parable of the sower? Explain it to us. Yeah, it's given to you. You know it. You're my disciple. You're my apostle. I'm going to explain to you. And it's beautiful. I see interest in souls. Okay, we have about 10 minutes and a lot of material to cover. So I'm just going to go as far as I can, and then the lesson will be done. So he also, like Brother Dennis mentioned, he taught like somebody having authority. And that impressed them. You will go to a synagogue and be used to how the rabbis taught, and how they spoke, and sometimes how monotonous they could be, and or anything. But then he comes here live, and he comes to the synagogue in Nazareth, and we have this account in Luke 4, and he was given the book of the prophet Isaiah to read. He quickly found among the long roll, it was in a Bible just like the one we have. We can find it. It takes us time enough to find a book on the Old Testament, maybe a minor prophet or so, that we're not so used to find, but this was a big scroll. He had to scroll like this, one way and then another way. And there were a couple of scrolls for Isaiah. It was such a long book. And he found the place where he was supposed to read. And then he read, standing up, as the Jews used to read. And then he sat. And when he sat, eyes were fixed on him. What's he going to say? How is he going to explain this? And then he said, You're gonna call me doctor. Heal yourself. You're gonna tell me all kinds of things. But I tell you, there were many prophets, and he keeps on telling the story, and then he says, this text has been fulfilled right as we speak. No rabbi has ever spoken this way. He spoke with such authority that some were opposed to the way he was teaching. They tried to kill him, and some of them rejected him because of the way he was teaching. So he spoke as one having authority, like we read in the Bible. Okay? So all his words were from heaven, and he backed them with book, chapter, and verse, like we use right now. They probably didn't have this break-ins of book, chapter, and verse. Well, he made reference to scriptures as he was preaching. He made reference of the Old Testament as he was speaking. So, like us, we need to make reference to book, chapter, and verse as we are preaching, as we are speaking. And how easily it is to just quote the verse and just take it out of context and don't tell people where the verse is. There's a brother in Brown Trail, his name is Willie Alvarenga. He went to Monterey for a gospel meeting, and somebody took the task of counting how many verses he quoted. He stood up there without the Bible, and he quoted almost 100 verses. And all the audience was really, really impressed at the way he did it, because he's made it his hobby, his passion to memorize scripture, and he knows a lot of scripture. And I told Brother Willie, you're quoting in Spanish. I told him, I'm afraid personally to go into memorizing a lot of English. I don't want to lose space in my brain. That I'm in need for something else. But I mean, it was just a light comment. Don't take it too serious. But he said, every verse I quote in Spanish, I know in English. And I don't quote in Spanish if I don't know in English first. And I said, wow. I said, it's just incredible. And just big encouragement to us. So he encouraged me to memorize. We did memorize a lot in English while at school in Memphis. But usually, your native tongue sticks around more easily. And that's why I told him I was a little afraid to immerse into English memorizing, but it's something that needs to be done, or at least you need to have your outline with the verses you're going to be speaking of. So this is crisis preaching, and excuse me for going off in other stories, and it's not my, but maybe you help us understand some things. So he also, any comments so far before I keep going? Yes, please. Correct. Yes. Thank you, Josh Chair, for that comment. Yeah, it reminded me of that very verse on the Sermon on the Mount, where he sat and they came to him. Very good. Yes, he was probably walking around or something, but then when they saw him sitting down, they understood. He didn't have to tell them, I'm about to teach. They knew what he meant, and here they come around him to hear him preach. Brother Barry Hatcher, when he was about to teach, if those of you who know him, you know what he used to do, or some of you who took classes under him, he would clap. And that's when you knew the class was about to start. He would clap out loud and say, this is the Indonesian door knock. And they do this in Brazil too. They don't door knock like this. They clap outside the house and people know somebody's out the house. So he will clap his hands and everybody will come, and it's time for class. But not with Jesus. Different. Okay, there was no doubt, no contradiction, no uncertainty, no ignorance in his teaching. Everything was straight, correct. This is very important, because nowadays a lot of the preaching or teaching or lessons we can hear might have some type of uncertainty and some type of just leaving people on the air on some topics, or just don't talk about that topic, and that you're fine. Just give people what they want to hear, and don't answer. Don't even talk about hell. Don't talk about marriage. Don't talk about marital faithfulness or anything related to marriage. Just leave it alone. And but Christ spoke of any topic, and he gave you the truth on every topic, no matter what the question was. There was a rich young ruler that came, and he had a question. And guess what? Jesus gave him the answer. He knew this young man had a problem with covetousness. He knew it. And he told him, you know, you want to be perfect? Go and sell everything you have and come follow me. So this isn't a command for all Christians throughout all the ages. He knew the problem, and he's answering the question. He's asking him directly. He didn't say, well, you know what, just forget about it. Maybe let's do this. Let's go have and have. Sell half your possessions and come and follow me. No matter that your heart is divided, I want as many bodies following me, and I don't care about their hearts. Now, when Jesus answered the question directly, my heart, but it's what you need to hear. And he needs not a group of people. He needs whole hearts, not divided hearts. In his church, as Christians, because the Christians with the whole hearts are the ones that are going to motivate other people to be Christians with whole hearts. And guess what? If there's a Christian with half heart, guess what they're going to do? They're going to discourage anybody else who wanted to be a Christian, because they know, well, it's evidently he's not living what he's saying we should live, or he's not abiding by the Bible. So Jesus would answer the question directly. He'll be in trouble nowadays. he was to speak in public. And I would probably go to prison right away or something, because of the way and authority he spoke. Okay, so he spoke with book, chapter and verse. And last thing, and just 1 minute, I won't take long. He didn't use any sensationalism. He didn't use any tricks or any things on stage to call the attention, to draw them, because to draw people. He spoke the truth, he spoke the word, and that's it. Because you know something? Whatever it takes to draw people in gets what it takes to keep them in. If you used a big show, I mean, one clown and then doing these artistic things and, oh, that's nice, we like that church. Well, guess what? If you want to keep people in, you have to bring another clown and then a third clown and then four more clowns and if you want to retain them. Otherwise, they're going to go. So, Jesus preached the word and he didn't use anything else. He spoke the word and attracted them. In fact, when people were following him because of the bread, he told them, you are following me because you ate and got full. There is a better food than this, spiritual food for the soul. And guess what people did? They left. And then the apostle said, this is a hard saying. And truth was a hard saying, but it was the truth. Because Jesus didn't want to take advantage of his miracle powers to attract or feeding the 5,000 and so on to follow after him because they wanted to eat bread. And this is the way Jesus preached. So human beings need the spirits to be fed. We don't need a theater or a show or anything to keep us in church. We need to be fed when we come to church. And I'll tell you something. I speak for myself and my family. I come here and I eat when I come here to worship. I listen to Josh and Rick speak. I go back home spiritually already full. And then come back in the afternoon for another meal. And that's what we need. That's what people in San Angelo need, to eat the spiritual food. I don't need to put a show and tell you a lot of jokes. And sadly, how some speakers are really popular for the way they tell jokes and tell stories. And that's pretty much all they do. And like the preacher in Palenque in Mexico never used a verse. And that's not what we need. It's not what we need. If we do that, we're going to live hungry. Thank you for your attention and God bless you.